So we shall continue our discussion of Srila Jamal Krishna Goswami in keeping with the theme of the Dallas part of the Pandava Sena Youth Retreat. I have written a verse on the board which has great relevance, the verse and the purport. So we won't discuss too much because we want to speak more directly about Jamal Krishna Goswami. But it sort of will set the tone indicate the theme that guided Jamal Krishna Goswami and in his service and Srila Prabhupada in his service to his spiritual master. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Please repeat. Vyavasaya Atmika Buddhi Eka Iha Kurunandana Bahu Shaka Hi Ananta Cha Buddhaya Avyavasainam Vyavasayatmika Buddhir Ekeha Kurunandana Bahu Shaka Yanantascha Buddhayo Vyavayasinam. Vyavasayatmika, resolute in Krishna consciousness. Buddhi, intelligence. Eka, only one. Iha, in this world. Kurunandana, O beloved child of the Kurus. Bahu Shaka, having various branches. He, indeed, Ananta, unlimited, Cha, also, Buddhaya, intelligence, Avyavasainam, of those who are not in Krishna consciousness. Translation. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many branched. Please repeat. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called Vyavasayatmika intelligence. The Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 22:62 states, Shraddha Shabde Vishva Kahe Sudrida Nishchaya Krishna Bhakti Kaila Sarva Kama Kritahaya. Faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. When one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world, with obligations to family traditions, humanity, or nationality. Fruitive activities are the engagement of one's reactions from past good or bad deeds. When one is awake in Krishna consciousness, he need no longer endeavor for good results in his activities. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject to dualities like good and bad. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. This state is automatically achieved by progressive Krishna consciousness. I'll just add a note here that although Krishna consciousness, actual Krishna consciousness, is enacted on the spiritual platform, on the absolute platform, and therefore has no relationship with material conceptions of good and bad, but still in the progressive development of neophyte devotees, Srila Rupa Goswami and all of our acharyas have recommended that the devotees follow a lifestyle that's in the mode of goodness. Although Krishna consciousness itself is transcendental, but one's lifestyle should be in the mode of goodness, because the mode of goodness is favorable for developing pure Krishna consciousness, and it is also the example that we want to set for others to follow in their lifestyles, and especially those who are acting as Brahmins or trying to act as Brahmins, which is the crying need of society. Society needs Brahmins more than anything. It's essential to one's duty to, under ordinary circumstances, act in the mode of goodness. The resolute purpose of a person in Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge. Vasudeva sarvam iti samahatma sudurlabha. A person in Krishna consciousness is the rare good soul who knows perfectly that Vasudeva, or Krishna, is the root of all manifested causes. As by watering the root of a tree, one automatically distributes water to the leaves and branches, so by acting in Krishna consciousness, one can render the highest service to everyone, namely self, family, society, country, humanity, and so on. If Krishna is satisfied by one's actions, then everyone will be satisfied. So here Srila Prabhupada is continuing the discussion of faith, to actually stick to Krishna consciousness and be fixed in Krishna consciousness. One must have faith. One must have faith that personally one will achieve the highest perfection through Krishna consciousness. And one must have faith that through Krishna consciousness one is doing the best service to others. Himself, but not only himself, also his family, his community, his nation, all humanity, all living entities. Service in Krishna consciousness is, however, best practiced under the able guidance of a spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna, who knows the nature of the student, and who can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. As such, to be well versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna. And one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur instructs us in his famous prayers for the spiritual master as follows. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasya prasadan nagati kutopi, jayan stuvam stasya yasas trisandhyam, Vande Guru Sri Charanaravindam. By satisfaction of the spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes satisfied. And by not satisfying the spiritual master, there is no chance of being promoted to the plane of Krishna consciousness. I should therefore meditate and pray for his mercy 3 times a day and offer my respectful obeisances unto him, my spiritual master. So this is the part of the purport that really defines Srila Prabhupada's mood of devotional service, of taking the order of his spiritual master as his life and soul. And similarly, it defined Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami's mood of service. We discussed in the Japa seminar how the mind is like a child wanting to run here and there and do this and that. But we have to control the mind by the intelligence, and thus the intelligence is like the child's parent or guardian who has to use different techniques to control the child, or in more congenial terms, engage the child as the parent deems beneficial for the child and the whole situation. So this word buddhi, intelligence, we control the mind with the intelligence, and the word buddhi is mentioned twice in the verse. But our intelligence also has to be controlled. The intelligence must control the mind, but what direction will the intelligence give the mind? That must come from higher authorities, a higher intelligence. And in the case of the disciple, that intelligence comes from the spiritual master. And therefore the disciple accepts the order of the spiritual master as his life and soul. Then on that basis, his mind is controlled, his senses are controlled. Then Srila Prabhupada concludes, "The whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body. Not theoretically, but practically. When there is no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activities, one who is not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of fruitive activities." And we experience it. It may take place on the subtle platform that we're engaged with the body in devotional service, chanting, hearing, serving, but our mind is somewhere else. Or it may take place on the gross platform. We are resolving to become more serious about Krishna consciousness, to associate with advanced devotees. And the next thing we know, we're watching something on the screen that is not Krishna conscious. We don't even know how it happened. We just sort of got diverted, and you know that you can end up seeing something on the computer screen, you end up in the movie house, end up in the club, end up in so many different places. But if our intelligence is controlled by superior intelligence, by sadhu, shastra, and guru, and then our intelligence and our mind is controlled by our intelligence, then our senses will naturally be controlled. And again, controlled means not in a negative way, but in engagement in devotional service. In Juhu, when we first went, there were a lot of little children. That particular community, they were not devotees. When we got the Juhu land, there were buildings with tenants, and the Indian law was such that you couldn't really ask the tenants to leave. So we had so many tenants who had small children, and those children would run around and make noise, and sometimes they would make noise when Srila Prabhupada was speaking in the temple and or trying to meet with people or translate. And someone became, you know, very concerned about the disturbance that the children were making, and had the idea to tell them to be quiet. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, that is not the way. They can't be quiet. But you have to engage that propensity to talk and shout and scream in kirtan. So that's our approach. So when we talk about control, it really means to engage the senses and mind and intelligence in devotional service, not to like try to repress them or suppress them or any such thing. So Srila Prabhupada himself received the instruction from his spiritual master to preach Krishna consciousness in the English language in the Western countries. And as he described it, after receiving the instruction, he took some time to prepare himself. And he had misgivings. It was quite a daunting challenge to go alone to the West and try to introduce something that was so different. And not just different, but difficult. As Srila Prabhupada said, he thought that when he came to America and told people what the regulative principles were, they would say, Swamiji, thank you very much. Now you can go back to your own country. And Srila Prabhupada mentioned a godbrother of his who had preached to some aristocratic person from England who I believe had served in India during the British Raj. And that fellow had asked Prabhupada's godbrother, can you make me a Brahmin? And the godbrother had replied, yes, I can. But you have to follow these principles. No eating meat, fish, or eggs. No taking of intoxicants. No indulging in illicit sex. And no gambling. And that man, the Marquis of Zetland, he replied, impossible. These are our life. If we give up these things, what will we be left with? These are our life. So it was a great challenge that Srila Prabhupada was to face. And so he spent some time in India, as he said, preparing himself. But then he read this commentary of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur on this verse of the Bhagavad Gita, that the disciple takes the order of the spiritual master as his life and soul. And just as you cannot separate the body from the soul in conditioned life, the disciple cannot separate the order of his spiritual master from his very existence. And then Srila Prabhupada determined, I must go now. I must go to the West in pursuance of the order of my spiritual master. And so that was Srila Prabhupada's mood. That was Tamal Krishna Goswami's mood. I imbibed a little of that mood from Tamal Krishna Goswami, as I mentioned yesterday initially in our talk on the balcony in Calcutta. And that is the underlying theme or decision or motive in everything that Tamal Krishna Goswami did. So there were a couple of disciples of Srila Prabhupada who were not present last night. I'd like them to speak a little about their association with Tamal Krishna Goswami, his service, and then I will speak a little about the departure of the spiritual master and how to keep company with the spiritual master even in his physical absence, and some other esoteric topics. So I'll begin by calling on Chakri Prabhu, because I had informed him in Mishra Bhagavan. I'll also call on you. I didn't get a chance to speak to you earlier, so you can have a few minutes to prepare yourself if you need. While Chakri Prabhu speaks. And we'll have a chair here.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
It's so nice to be here again in Kalachanji Dham with all the devotees. It's so wonderful to have your association again after so many years. It's so nice to see everything going on so wonderfully here in this temple. And actually, this was the temple that Srila Gurudev built. It was by his endeavors that this beautiful temple and facility have come about. I remember back in the 1980s, we were still distributing books, but Srila Gurudev, he was a real pioneer, and he could see that, of course, the book distribution was definitely necessary, but somehow the public perception of us wasn't what it should be. Instead of seeing that we were doing something good by distributing this spiritual knowledge, people were not really understanding, and they thought that we were kind of like harassing them at the airports, or we were cult members or something like that. So he decided in a very innovative way, we stopped the book distribution, but we started to distribute just some paraphernalia and started collecting Lakshmi. But by doing that, we were able to construct this beautiful temple and this beautiful facility. And now we have this wonderful temple, and it's such a great asset for preaching, and the restaurant and like that. So it was through his vision that this all happened, through his vision like that. He always had the ability to think of ahead of everything, to know what needs to be done next. What are we doing now, and is it working or not working, and what should we be doing to make things better, instead of just, you know, like keep doing the same thing because that's what we've done before. But he was able to think of how we can do things better, what is the next step. He was very, very progressive like that. And he brought everyone here to build this temple. He brought all the devotees that had the expertise to do all the construction work. And he even had some devotees were trained to do things that they had never done before. Like one devotee, I think Yasamati Nandan, he learned how to do stained glass. And he did all the stained glass in the temple, and how to do upholstery and so many things. It was just his, by his his endeavors and his pushings that this project was built. It was his vision. And also, he wanted to have spiritual communities where devotees would live right around the community like that. That's what he liked. And so he started just buying all the properties around the temple so the devotees could live near the temple. You could see that in this project, and also in Houston, all the devotees live around the temple. So that was his vision, that there should be spiritual communities where the devotees could live near the temple and just be within walking distance to the temple. So many times you see there are nice temples, but the devotees can't live near the temple. So it's hard enough to come even when you're within walking distance. So what to speak of if you have to drive from a far distance. So that was always how he wanted spiritual communities to be. And recently my wife and I, we've been listening to some of his lectures that he gave, and especially the later ones, from 1999 and 2000. And you could see that Srila Gurudev, he was on the highest spiritual platform, that he was deeply immersed in reading all the literatures of the six Goswamis and all the Acharyas, and he had reached that highest perfection. He was fully absorbed in their teachings, and that his mood was that he wanted to give that to us. He wasn't satisfied just experiencing those deep spiritual emotions himself. His mood was how to deliver that to us. And he was giving classes on some of these advanced literatures and trying to help us come to that highest level, that highest understanding that he was experiencing himself. And sometimes he would kind of push us a little bit, you know, try to make us not be complacent, and to try to work harder to come to that highest level like that. So that's very interesting, and you know, anybody who wants to, all his lectures are there, and if you listen to them, you just learn so much. There's such a wealth of knowledge in his lectures. And one thing I remember he said, of course, some people say he had his heavy nature, but he said, if you see something wrong and you don't do something about it, then you're part of the ignorance. So if there's something wrong, then it's your duty to say something about it. So that was his mood. Some people misunderstood it, but it was always for our welfare. Like one devotee spoke in Houston, Rukmini Devi, and she said, one devotee asked Prabhupada, sometimes you're very angry with us, how should we take it? And Prabhupada said, you should be very jubilant, because that shows you have someone that cares about you, someone that loves you enough to correct you. So that was how I felt about Srila Gurudev. When you did something wrong, he would let you know, but that was because he loved you and he really cared about you. And I was noticing, listening to some of the lectures, his last lectures, that in some way he really was opening up more and more to the devotees and really, really trying to give him more of himself toward the end. And in several lectures, I remember in Fiji, he was telling the devotees where he was staying, and he said, just come over whenever you want, just come and be with me, that I want everyone to just come and be with me. And that theme came up many times in the last few years. I remember one lecture he gave in Houston, he was saying he had to leave, and I think that was the last time he was in Houston. And he was saying, I have to leave now, but I'm not going to be thinking that I'm leaving. When I get on that plane, I'm going to be thinking that I'm actually coming to Houston. Because if I think that I'm leaving here, it's just going to be too much to bear. It'll be too much to think. So in my mind, I'm thinking that I'm going to be arriving in Houston and not leaving. So even in one conversation I had with him toward the end of his stay in this world, he just said, just call me. Whenever you feel like it, just call me anytime. And so that was his mood in the end. He was just trying as much as possible to give of himself. And well, there's one story also. Once one devotee was very ill, Mahavishnu Swami, and this devotee said, probably many of you know this story, that I think I'm going to leave my body this time. And then Srila Gurudev said, no, you can't go yet. I want to be the first one to go so I can greet everyone when they come back to the spiritual world. So I feel like that, and I'm sure many devotees feel like that. Srila Gurudev is there in the spiritual world, and he's ready to greet us and to help us come back there. And that his guidance and his love and his teachings are still there with us to help us in our journey back to Godhead, back to Krishna. Jai Srila Gurudev ki jai.
Krishna, why don't you call Sri Vishaya Kripasanevi Chal Patitanam Pavanevi Vaishnavi Namaha. I first met Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami in 1975 in January when he took me on as a 16-year-old runaway that was wanting to get the best thing that was available in the ISKCON, which I found when I saw a picture of Tamal Krishna Goswami with Vishnu John Swami in a Back to Godhead magazine. I was living as a brahmachari in the temple when I saw those effulgent figures with Radha Damodar in the middle. I read the Back to Godhead article and really felt like this is the best thing that's going on. And so I wanted to be part of that and got permission from my GBC to join the Radha Damodar party, where I flew to Atlanta, Georgia, and then got picked up by Adi Keshava, who was just leaving his post as a temple president in Boston to join the Radha Damodar party, and picked me up and brought me down to Gainesville, Florida. And on the front yard of the Gainesville temple was Vishnu John Swami and his band singing bhajans at the Sunday feast. And these personality is just so effulgent. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was working something out with the temple president, Amarinda, at the time, I remember. And so I got to see both of them. And then the next morning I met them personally, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj agreed to take me on the Radha Damodar party so I could be engaged in book distribution. And then we went to meet Srila Prabhupada in February, a month later, in Atlanta. And all the buses that were from all over the place, Tamal Krishna Maharaj had devotees doing book distribution, Sankirtan, all over America with these buses. So all the buses drove to Atlanta, and each one of us who were on the Radha Damodar party, we got to be personally introduced to Srila Prabhupada, which was quite a privilege. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj had such a relationship with Srila Prabhupada, and when I saw them how they worked together, I could see that they'd been working together for a long time and had a very close, very like Prabhupada said, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is my right-hand man. And as soon as I could see Prabhupada and Tamal Krishna Maharaj together, I could see how they had that relationship. And it was like there was Goswami and Srila Prabhupada, and they would talk about things, and nobody else was really on that level. You know, it's like they were planning things together. And Prabhupada would have plans, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was able to anticipate the order of the spiritual master. So he had that relationship so that he was able to introduce each and every one of us personally to Srila Prabhupada. We came in and I had a flower, and then I put the flower on in front of Srila Prabhupada. He was behind his desk. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, Prabhupada, this is Bhakta Michael. He joined our party at a young age. And Prabhupada looked up at me and said, oh, very good. And then we all sat down. And Srila Prabhupada said, he motioned to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And he said, you have a very good leader with Tamal Krishna Goswami. And if you just follow him, then I will be pleased. And I didn't realize it at the time, that that was very special. And it's not like Prabhupada said that about so many of his disciples, that you have a good leader, and if you follow him, I'll be pleased. I didn't realize that that was how rare and special that was, and unique to their relationship. But that's the relationship that they had. And then when Tamal Krishna Maharaj went to join Srila Prabhupada during his last days, Prabhupada was always very concerned that any major decision that was made, that Tamal Krishna Maharaj was involved. I heard a tape one time of a room conversation, and Srila Prabhupada, and we were talking about going on this parikram around Govardhan Hill. And then Prabhupada said, is Tamal here? Where is Tamal? And he would ask like that, and he didn't want a decision to be made in the room unless Goswami was there. And later on, after Prabhupada passed away, the GBC went to Prabhupada's godbrother, Bhakta Sridhar Maharaj. Did I get that right? Yeah, Sridhar Maharaj is Srila Prabhupada's, one of his closest godbrothers, who stayed at Prabhupada's house when he was living in Allahabad. And Sridhar Maharaj, the GBC were asking different questions about, you know, how the parampara would go on and the initiations and so many different details. And one of the things that Sridhar Maharaj said was that amongst all of you, the one who reflects the mood of your Guru Maharaj the most is Tamal Krishna Goswami. So that was the kind of thing that we had with Tamal Krishna Maharaj's association. That's why this temple in Houston, his zone, is so special and so blessed. The places where Tamal Krishna Maharaj has his samadhi, Govardhan, Mayapur, and Radhakala Chanjidham are the three special places in this world where Tamal Krishna Maharaj continues to reside and give us his association. So we're very happy to be here, and the association of his disciples and close God brothers like Srila Giriraj Maharaj. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.